there is a lot of rejections, but we were very persistent in terms of following up with the banks. Even we tried to meet them without appointments, especially when they go for tea, we would actually tag along with them. But again, like, banks are really high security, so getting inside was also tough. So we'd actually get in to meet friends inside the bank, and then we'd ask them, like, hey, can I go and meet this particular department? So yeah, it was like a story to tell, but there was a lot of rejection.
Hello, everyone. And that was my guest, Anish Achudin. He's the CEO and co-founder of Open. Open is a new age digital banking platform. So in this exciting episode, he talks about how they raised $37 million from prominent investors and shares some amazing growth statistics. He talks about how they use customer acquisition channels. He shares his user experience strategies when developing the website and mobile app. He talks about being a 5x entrepreneur. He talks about the importance of branding and PR and getting your startup off the ground. He talks about how they evaluate talent. And finally, you will learn how to deal with corporate companies if you're a startup. So we've got some interesting biz dev chats as well. So please enjoy the show. Hello, Anish. Thank you for coming on the show today.
Hi, Neil. How are you doing?
Yeah, great. Thanks. Please tell us what you're building.
Yeah, so Neil, Open is an SME-focused digital banking platform that helps small businesses automate their finances. We don't have a banking license. So what we have done is, like, we partnered with an existing bank and built this on top of their infrastructure. Currently, we are powering close to 700,000 small businesses on the platform. We process over 24 billion US dollars in annualized transactions. And we manage close to $1.2 billion in checking account deposits for these customers.
And how did you come up with the idea?
So this is my fifth startup. So I'd been a serial entrepreneur, and I've also been part of the senior management of leading fintech companies like PayU and Citrus in the past.
Yeah.
So while I was working with my startups and companies like PayU, I got a chance to interact with a lot of small businesses. And one thing which I realized was that small businesses struggle a lot when it comes to managing their banking.
Yeah.
They struggle a lot when it comes to tracking their cash flows. They have to deal with multiple interfaces, like a separate payment gateway for accepting online payments, a separate invoicing software for creating invoices, and then paying their vendors and employees were always a pain. And this was taking away a lot of their time and energy away from their core business. So that's when we thought, like, if your bank account is your it's a single point of all your cash flows, and that's where the money flows in. And if I can recognize that the $10 that comes into my bank account is from Neil for a freelance project, which I for an invoice that is created on the platform for a freelance project, and the $5 I'm actually paying to, say, my colleague Anurag is for a payroll, then I can automate income and expenses while you're doing your banking transactions.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how the thought process of, we thought, like, can we build a digital bank specifically designed to help small businesses automate their finances? That's how the initial idea came up.
Awesome stuff. So let's go back to the start, the very start. How did you get this off the ground?
So we started in 2017, and that's a time when I was leading the small business unit for one of the leading payment gateways in the country called PayU. And that's when this idea really struck me. And we initially started with a 10-member team. Most of this team, we have worked together for the past 5 startups together. And even my co-founders, this is my 5th startup together. So it was relatively easier to put the team initially. And the next big challenge was, how do we actually get the initial capital? And that's where my the CEO of PayU, whom I used to report in PayU. So in fact, this company acquired my previous startup as well. So it was easier for me to pitch to him for the initial investment. So the initial $250K come from Amrish Rao and Jitin, who are leading angel investors in the country. And that's how we got started in the initial phase. And then later we built a team of, currently we are somewhere around a 250-member team with 4 offices in India, even though primarily we are based out of Bangalore. We raised close to $37 million US dollars of investment in the last 3 years from leading global investors like Tiger Global, Speed Invest of Europe, Recruit Group Japan, and 8 other institutional investors. But if you really ask me from the starting part, the first 1 year was the most toughest part of us, because for us to launch the service, you need to partner with bank, because in India, because you don't have a banking license. And since this is concept was really new compared to what it was in Europe or US. For example, if in Europe there is Tide, which is a neobank or a digital bank for small businesses, or in Europe there is Holvi. But in India, it was a new concept. So convincing banks to partner with us was our biggest challenge. It took us around 8 to 9 months to convince, get the first bank on board. That's how we started slowly growing.
What were their reservations then?
The reservations primarily, especially we were a very small startup at this point of time, and especially for a bank, if they have to expose their infrastructure for somebody else to build a banking service, they were more worried about like, what if like tomorrow the startup, something happens to the startup? And secondly, in terms of the compliances in India, the regulations were not really clear at that point of time on this type of thing. So how do the regulator would view that? There was a lot of apprehension from the internal compliance teams of the banks as well. These were the major challenges we were actually grappling with at the point of time.
What kept going in the early days then?
For the first 6 to 8 months, we thought like, because of our experience of being in this fintech financial services space for the last 15 years, I thought like it's really easier for me to close a partnership. Mm-hmm. And we always used to tell the team that, okay, we are going to launch this in 2 months. But when we really, the actual reality was that there was a lot of rejections during this period of time. Even though you know the bank, the people sitting on the other side really well, they were also helpless. So there was a lot of rejections, but we were very persistent in terms of following up with the banks. Even we tried to meet them without appointments, especially when they go for tea, we would actually tag along with them. But again, like banks are really high security, so getting inside was also tough. So we'd actually get into meet friends inside the bank, and then we'd ask them like, hey, can I go and meet this particular department? So yeah, it was like a story to tell, but there was a lot of rejections.
Well, lots of hustling as well, I suppose.
Right, yeah.
So those for our listeners who are building a startup and may have to deal with corporate people, what advice would you give to those people? What in terms of startups for, you know, business development for startups? Any advice?
Right. So especially in our industry, I'll specifically talk about the fintech as an industry, and definitely yeah. I'll talk about, because more about generic, I'll talk about other segments. But especially in fintech, you have the business development or strategic alliances are very key to the success of your startup or your business. And the good thing which we did was that we heavily invested on banking alliances or a sales guy who come from the same background right from the beginning, even though we couldn't afford him, but we took that decision because especially this is very important. And we found that most of the fintechs, they don't really see this in the initial days. It's mostly they see that, okay, hey, as a founder, I will only do this part. Obviously, the founder should actually step into the shoes, but you also need to invest heavily on that. And we put this guy in Mumbai, which is a financial center of India where most of the banks are headquartered. So one is like invest heavily on the right people right from the beginning, especially in segments where there is a huge compliances and like, you know, unlike building a e-commerce site where you don't have any dependencies, it's okay. But in industries where you have like huge dependency on partners, it's always invest on people as well as other resources on that part. The second thing is like being patient, because especially if you are a first mover in the market, you may face a lot of resistance and the challenges, but it is worth that patience or worth that wait, because once you are able to get that thing and you are actually the category creator in that segment, and then things becomes much more easier. That's what I learned, at least from the experience of going with Open as well. And I think this can be applied in other industries as well, not only in fintechs. Maybe getting the right team put together initially when you start up, maybe like you may not need experienced 5-year, 10-year experience guy for certain things. So putting the right team which aligns with your vision, but there are areas where you really wanted the experienced guys, then you need to also get them as well. So this is my, at least, from my personal view, this is what I would advise fellow entrepreneurs.
Did you have to do lots of schmoozing as well? Being really, really nice to people.
Yeah. So that was also there, basically.
Good stuff. So you got your first partnership. What happened after that?
So finally we are able to crack one of the banks, which is ICICI Bank, which is the second largest bank in the country. Mm. Finally, with around 6 months of chasing them, they finally agreed to partner with us, and they really liked the solution. So first thing what we did was a pilot for 2 months, and that got a lot of new users, and that's when they found, okay, hey, this is like a alternative channel for me to grow the business through a partnership method. And once we went live with ICICI, then the other banks which whom we were approaching, they used to come back and say that, hey, you know what, we were in discussion for a very long time, and we just launched it with this particular bank, so we also, how can we also partner with us that while that was happening, we started scaling up the team, because each stage of your startup requires requires a different skill sets of a team. But that doesn't mean that, okay, the initial team who are with us, definitely you need to really help them clear the growth path. So we also really pumped up the team. And suddenly in the first 1 year itself, we were became around 50-member, 60-member team, where we have invested heavily on the tech, on the products, on the marketing side. And then we also looked at areas where, because during the initial years, we are still only had that $250K of fund. So you can't spend too much on inorganic marketing. So that's when we focused on using influencer marketing content, and other organic ways of reaching your product, maybe like dealing with trade associations or partnering with strategic events, trade shows, road shows, etc. And the bank, we also turned in during this time, we also made the bank, the partner bank, also as a distribution channel for them. So their sales force, they had around 4,000 sales force on the ground. They also have started marketing as well. So these are the new avenues which came up, because we never thought that the bank would sell our solutions if they will only provide that infrastructure. So that's how suddenly it started growing. And then we started pitching to investors. Yeah. Initially, a lot of domestic investors were really apprehensive about this idea. Their point was neobanking works well for markets like Europe and US, but in India, people don't trust a non-bank with banking services or with their money. So that was their biggest apprehension. And that's when the Recruit Group of Japan, which is one of the seven largest corporation in Japan, and they have invested in a few neobanks globally as well. So they somehow read an article about Open in the internet, and they reached out to us. And then when they came in, then a few more investors pitched in as well. So that resulted in our first major fund, which is which we raised around close to 12 million. We raised around $2 million at that point of time, which we called as a pre-series A round. And this is also one thing which I wanted to talk to other, I want to share these insights with other entrepreneurs as well, because many times I had seen founders or entrepreneurs not taking PR very seriously, or getting the visibility on the media that seriously. They say that, okay, hey, somebody will steal my idea, or I'm not ready to go to the media. But in this case, for me, when we were constantly engaged to ensure that, okay, like people talk about neobanking, or we create a lot of thought leadership in partnership with the media through your friends and your network. And that resulted in things like, firstly, prospective investors coming to know about your platform. And then this also helps to for other partners as well. Like the other banks also felt, hey, they are in the news. So the FOMO is getting created as well. So these things, which I also wanted to tell my fellow entrepreneurs as well, you should focus a lot on the branding of the startup and your idea and the thought leadership as well in the stages. And once this investment came in, we are then kind of again invested heavily on the people, on the technology, and being the first mover in the market, that gives a lot of a lead or headway in the market. And that's how suddenly it started growing. And today, actually, we are the largest SME-focused neobank in all the 35 neobanks globally as well. So that was the thing. Yeah. Wow. So, and it's also, Neil, I know it's not a apple-to-apple comparison, because India is a large market. India has 51 million MSMEs itself. Compared to players in some of the in Europe, they have a smaller target base. So I'm not saying that this is, but in terms of the number of SME businesses on the platform, we are the largest globally as well.
How do you feel about that?
To be frank, we never we didn't expected that, and in fact, we always used to look at some of these peers of us in Europe, and in fact, all of their investors also ended up investing in Open as well. So it's a good feeling to to reach this level. But the more important thing is for the team, because the biggest thing which I cherish about Open is the culture and the people which we have today, the entire 250 member team which we have. And when we started the 10 member team, they never we are actually going through the struggles of not having a banking partner or not able to launch anything. They were always very positive. They always say that, okay, we are there behind you. And that's the same kind of a culture which we carried, because normally people used to tell me that, okay, when you grow more than 30 plus or 50 plus employees, then the culture goes away. There'll be smaller groups. Today, we heavily invested on our people and culture department. I interviewed around, and this is also one thing which I wanted to give as a takeaway to my fellow entrepreneurs. I interviewed around 30 people for the position of the, the HR role, so-called HR human resource function role. And all of them were talking, hey, let's give resources, let's give the resources this thing to make them happy. Let's give resources that. So the word resources were coming like very frequently till the time I met my current people and culture head Priyanka, where she addressed the colleagues as people, and then she told like, you know, yeah, I'm going to name this department as people and culture. Obviously, a lot of companies does that. I asked her like, is it for a social media branding? She told, let's don't even publicize this thing. It's our DNA part, and you know, so and it's more like a family-led culture, which we have. Everybody's like, you know, knows each other. The families knows, and that's a culture which always continued in the company. And the people come from diverse backgrounds. So we have, you know, around 70% of the senior leadership are women. Almost 37% of the total workforce is women, and there's a lot of people who come from unconventional backgrounds. But at the same time, we also have people from Stanford and IITs and IIMs as well. And everybody sheds their name tags on LinkedIn. Basically, once you get into the office, we're all one, whether it is you are working on the facilities or you are actually working on, you're a CTO, everybody's like, you know, or you're a fresher or you're a 20-year-old experience, everybody actually is like, you know, there's a kind of like a comfort in the bond that you're. So culture has actually played a major role in our success, I would say, because it's become easier while we build processes as we went, but as we grew, the culture part or the human bonding part led processes actually is working for us a really lot.
Yeah, you're still talking about hiring and any advice you can give our listeners, you know, how do you go about evaluating talent then?
As I mentioned earlier, every stage of a company would require a different kind of a skill set. For example, when you, after being, after when we have 500,000 businesses on the platform now, you will need somebody who is really experienced to take that to probably now a 2 million or 3 million in the next 2 years. So we always look for people who have, some kind of an entrepreneurial background or like in those companies who have taken the ownership. That is the first criteria.
Yeah.
Second, how do they blend with the culture of the team? Because we are very clear that anybody who is part of this journey, we will always create a good career path or a, you know, a success path for everyone. It's not, I've seen companies where when the company raises the next round of funding, there's a new set of people coming in and old people are not really taken care. But here we always create an equal opportunity, whether you're actually coming at a level to take on the leadership. But at the same time, I ensure that okay, the people who had been with you till this journey, they're also given an equal opportunity, either reskilling them if it required, or maybe like giving them higher opportunities basically to grow as well. So one, definitely skill sets, but more, while skill sets, industry experience, all matters, mostly entrepreneurial or people who have, who can take the ownership, self go-getters, and more importantly, the 50% weight goes into how do they blend into the culture. Yeah. So that's where like, while the founders or the you know, respective managers take a call on the interview discussions, finally it gets into my people and culture head Priyanka, where if she rejects someone, then we don't have even a veto right or enough thing right.
Yeah, yeah.
And she ensures that kind of people only gets into the family.
Yeah, yeah. So you've gone from managing sort of 10 people to 250. How's that changed you? How's your management or your leadership style changed? Or, you know, what does leadership mean to you then?
So I'd done that previously because in 2009, when I joined this company called PayU, I was part of the initial three-member team. And then when I joined back them through an acquisition in 2015, the company has grown to 1,500 and I was part of the senior leadership as well. But what I really feel is as a leader, I do believe that if you are, first thing is like if you're able to build that personal connect with the, your team and helping them, inspire them to grow by being with one of them, zero micromanagement, give people the opportunity to, you know, do mistakes as well as like, you know, guide them to go to the right path. That's the reason why, like, even in Open today, around 40-50% of the people are from companies where, you know, I would have worked in the past. Maybe I'd worked with them only for a week or a month or a year, but, you know, I always used to carry along people because this the personal connect and the bond that you make on your workplaces with your, you know, your colleagues, basically, it matters. And then you as a leader, whenever there is a real challenge people are facing through, that's when you need to actually be in the forefront and say that, hey, you know, don't worry, I'm here for them. Otherwise, you are, you know, you should be fearless enough to commit mistakes. Basically, if it's with a good intention, you are doing a mistakes, it's okay. You do the, I will take care of it. Also helping them grow, basically, being a good mentor to them, a friend to them. These are a few things which I used to personally follow, you know, with my teammates or as a leader.
Yeah. What's been the highlight so far then? You know, what's been your best day at your time at Open?
Best time, I would say, is on the day when we were finally able to launch the platform with the first bank. We were expecting like we would get some 10 customers, but that day, the first 1 hour itself, we had around 400 businesses signing up on the platform, and we were like thinking, like, is there something wrong in our, the system? And I was just joking, like, you know, the guy who actually built the system, he was able to run away because there is something really wrong. But that first day was like a most special day for us in Open. And today, when we look back, this entire neobanking itself has grown as an industry of its own. There are like close to 10 neobanks in India. Over 2 billion investment has gone. There are like consumer neobanks. There are neobanks in our category as well. So at least, you know, able to create a segment altogether and creating, job opportunities, not only through us, but through competitors or things. So these are something which, it's not on a particular day, basically, but, you know, these are all things which we keep on. It's a good feeling to have, basically, for all of us.
Yes. Good feeling. So what about those people living in villages then? I'm assuming, you know, cash is still king. What are your thoughts or approaches to that?
As you rightly said, India is still a cash economy, but there's a lot of shift that actually happened in the last 3 to 4 years towards digital adoption. First, it started in, 2016 or 17 when the government really banned the notes, the demonetization happened. So that's when consumers started adopting digital payment methods like Google Pay or a phone pay or UPA, which is like a domestic mobile payment systems in India. This led merchants or retailers to accept digital payments. So that was the first wave of, digital payments happened. Of course, this was also aided by certain other factors like the growth of WhatsApp and the Jio network, which is making it data cheap in India. And then over a period of time, it started really growing because even after the demonetization, people were comfortable using mobile payments. And that led merchants to think that, okay, now my consumers are paying me digitally. There are also tools available for me to manage my business businesses or money digitally. So they started going to the Play Store or the App Stores and finding out the apps as well. And then specifically when the pandemic actually hit, that's a time when really businesses felt that if I don't go online, if I don't take my business digitally, it will really impact me or affect my business. So there was like a sudden acceleration of, businesses adopting different tools for banking, for financial automation, for payment. So while it was naturally happening, probably the pandemic actually accelerated this by 3 years. What would have happened next 3 years would actually have happened now. So
you mentioned demonetization then. Looking back, has it been a success then, do you think? Was it the right thing to do?
So I think from an objective of demonetization, I don't like to too much comment on that part, on whether it achieved the real objective of chasing away black money and all. But I look at it this way: it actually helped in terms of nurturing the digital payments as an ecosystem, because otherwise the larger population of in India would still have been on primarily on cash, even though still the larger population is on cash. But the slowly the tier two, tier three cities or even the smaller towns in India, they started adopting digital payments because of demonetization, which actually led to a lot of new job opportunities, growth of like new segments and things like that. So in a different way, I would say it has impacted a lot of industries in a very positive way. And now because of this is easier lending option for retailers and consumers. They have multiple options. Banking has become much more easier. That's the way in which I look at demonetization.
Interesting thoughts there. I want to talk about the design of the app, specifically the user experience. Obviously, that's the most important thing.
Sure.
Any thoughts on that? Any strategies that you used? Anything that worked? Anything that didn't work?
We started off it as a web first strategy rather than a mobile strategy like most of our peers in the other markets. Because evolved businesses were carrying their banking transactions on the web while the major population are still on the mobile in India. So that's how we got started. But we did a lot of user research, and we wanted to make banking like Facebook, because banks portals are always, it's very complicated. They actually intimidate you basically in the name of trust. test and things like that. So first thing was like we automated the entire onboarding process digitally by uploading your PAN card or your, you know, national ID card like Aadhaar, and instantly you are able to get your account number. So that's small delights which we created. And then from we followed a very minimalistic design experience as well. And since we are also just apart from offering a bank account, we are integrating a lot of this financial services like built-in invoices, payouts, invoices and accounting to that thing. So, and we designed it for people who don't understand accounting, because for me as an entrepreneur, I never used to understand double entry accounting. So we designed it in such a way that, so that's, and it kept on evolving over a period of time. And then we launched the mobile app as well. And in the, from a design philosophy perspective, we brought in a lot of interactions on the app. For example, we heavily used videos where we build a personal connect with the user, where like, you know, our own teammates only used to appear on these videos. And firstly, we used to, when you actually log into the dashboard, then their team used to welcome and explain about the product. So people also started building a personal connect with the team behind these things. And then you go to a particular sessions, we always have a video-based help sections, which was nudging the user about, hey, this is what the product is as well. And even when it comes to the small things like support, while we offer an intercom chat support, we were like, you know, putting a very casual, we wanted to reach the level of like an Amazon, it is, but it's a long thing away, but still, like, for example, we use emojis or memes when we are talking to a happy customer, this thing that. So we try to create an identity or a persona of our own where they feel like, hey, this is like a Instagram for banking. That's kind of an experience. So that's what we did on the user experience overall.
How quickly could you test this then?
I think it took a long time. I would still say we are testing it even in 3 years, because you know, and we had gone through multiple iterations in terms of the design, in terms of it, even on the main website, the inside pages, inside designs as well. So over a period of the last 3 years, user research is like an ongoing activity. There is nothing like you get the initial set of feedbacks as well. I mean, when you we believe that, okay, you can't do with just focus groups, maybe like 500-600 focus groups alone. It's the real customers who need to give the feedback. But we use a lot of tools like, you know, for example, Hotjar, and you know, supported by the tools like CleverTap, and combining with the tools to really monitor what the user really needs, and then talking to the customers on different segment of the customers on a regular basis, the product managers to speak. So that all, it's actually a continuous journey. I don't say that even now we are perfect basically, but you know, we now know that when you have to launch a new feature, how would I test it basically, or after a week if I had to change the flow, I have to get the insights required for
that. You had any surprising feedback?
So many times, like whenever we used to offer you know, the automated accounting reports, we didn't have a PDF or an Excel download. So sometimes user says that, okay, you know, this is all important for me. Or there are certain things like when we build, we have built an automated accounting engine. So basically, when you're doing the banking transactions, all your profit and loss balance sheet was like being automatically being prepared. But then in India specifically, a lot of businesses use you know, legacy accounting software, desktop accounting software called Tally, like a QuickBooks in the US. But these guys doesn't want it to migrate because they don't trust any other accounting softwares as well. So we thought, like, you know, by simplifying this thing, everybody will use that. But then we ended up building a connector for that existing accounting softwares as well. So there are like many, you know, feedbacks, many of the features which has not been still built, but consumers always keep asking, say that, hey, this is very critical for me as well. So
if you can't beat them, join them. As I say, yes. you mentioned marketing before. In terms of customer acquisition, I think you mentioned a few channels there. What's your best channel? You know, what's your worst channel? Any insights?
So in India specifically, while digital accounts for close to around 60% of our customer acquisition, and in digital, there are multiple channels. Yeah. It could be partnering, using influencers, using our own content channel, or even using platforms like, say, Quora or other platforms where we used to heavily seed content. Then we have we actually spend very less success on the inorganic side on Facebook and Google, but mostly we spend, we do a lot of events for particular industries, like for startups, where we bring in, called the Open Up Series, where we bring in investors and startups together. And then again, what really worked very well for us was that we realized that India is still especially when it comes to selling to businesses, while digital is a good channel, but people wanted to see face-to-face interactions. Right. And this is what our learnings from our initial partnership with the bank, where the bank used to put its sales force to market open. But then we can't put like thousands of people or feet on the street on the ground, because that may make this model not unviable. So that's a time when that's when we looked at channel partners who are people who used to always resell softwares in their local market. So we used to bring them as a part of the thing. So channel partners is like one market. And then during this process, we also ended up making around 8 of these leading banks in India to distribute their product to their existing customers. So banking channel also is like another great channel. But slowly now, digitally speaking up, especially after the pandemic, a lot of influencers, YouTubers, even small businesses coming and directly signing up, they don't really need somebody to talk to. They're really happy with that do-it-yourself kind of thing. So digitally speaking up, but otherwise the channel partner sales, that's a major channel for us.
Let's talk about finance. You said you raised $30 million dollars. Is that pressure on or pressure off now?
Just want to correct it. We raised close to $37 million dollars.
Yeah.
Fundraising is a continuous activity. I mean, as founders, once you raise funds, basically, then, you know, you need to keep on raising. There is always like a lot of pressure because the market is really big. And especially when the market is evolving with lot of new players coming into the space or a lot of traditional legacy players slowly changing or pivoting to this model. And especially since you are the market leader, you keep on investing in new products, new technologies and things like that. So it's a continuous thing. So there is nothing like, once you raise a fund, then you can actually sit idle. And definitely you're also answerable to investors. You need to show growth. Mm. So, the stress factor is constant, I would say, for an entrepreneur. Whether you are not raised funds or whether you have raised funds, that remains the same.
What's the number one thing that investors want from you then? What if they told you like in like 3 or 4 years time, this is what we expect from you?
Build, millions of businesses using the platform, then the platform itself will become like a cash cow because there are like other things you can actually do, whether it's lending, wealth management, monetizing the user bases and things like that. So it's all investors. It's about growing your market, continuing the market leadership. Yeah, these are the few things which, investors look for generally.
In terms of the pitching process, how did you find that?
Seven pages slides. I took a different approach into most of my investors. I always used to not present the slide, but I always used to present the product, the live demo of the product.
That's good,
right? Because one thing it gives because if we are passionate about our product and if you're able to actually tell the story with a live product, it's much better than slides. But I also agree that at some point of times you may also slice some areas. You can't always demo the platform every time, basically, as well. But so far for all the fundraisings, it's basically the live product, the stories, and the customers. Rather than a slide, I always used to use the main website and the inside dashboard to explain to investors.
It's always a risk doing the live product demo. You didn't crash, did it? Or didn't go wrong, did it?
Yeah. So and it happens many times, but I think we all know the Murphy's this thing. So I think everybody is used to it. And I right now I don't feel like even if it is like it isn't working, because the other person also have seen this multiple times. He or she understands that part. So I remember one of the key strategic investors where I didn't have a deck to be present to him, and I was trying to log into the platform and it was not even getting logged in and things like that. But he was very understanding and he says, hey, it's fine, it happens. So that I think as entrepreneurs, it's okay. Like, don't get too nervous, if something doesn't work.
Awesome. Last few questions then. Obviously, you're a fifth time entrepreneur. What advice would you give to our first time entrepreneurs then?
First thing is true for the first time entrepreneurs, always try to the go to market is really important. So launch the product with the minimum viable thing before focusing too much on presenting this idea and raising an investor, because a lot of this time goes away in that part. So if it's always it's always advisable to actually do an MVP and launch the product. But more importantly, before that, I forgot to mention, but the right team, get the right co-founders is very important. And sometimes you need to ensure that you have the guy who's who's good in tech, somebody who's good in marketing. So putting the right co-founding team or the initial team is also very critical. And this can actually make or break your startup as well. And you also need to ensure when you're selecting these co-founders that, okay, they are really scalable enough, because it should not be the case that after a Series C or a Series B and an investor comes and say, hey, you know what, like now your guy would have managed only 10 engineers by now, but you have now 500 engineers. He may not be scalable, basically. So so rather than that, you always foresee that kind of a growth in advance as well. Focus on branding you as an entrepreneur and the platform, because the initial days, it's you who is the brand for the company. So get into as many thought leaderships as possible. At the same time, start getting the products as well. And then use platforms like Product Hunt and the initial set of customers to get your initial set of customers to test out your platform. So this is what I would advise for the first time entrepreneur.
So when it comes to branding then, do you think most startups should start from day one, as it were, thinking about branding? Or should wait until they get some customers first and get some feedback?
I think, it depends. Basically, for example, either you become the brand for the company, like as a founder or a CEO, if the product is not really ready, or if it takes like another 6 to 9 months, or maybe another approach is to start. If your product is if you really believe that, okay, this product can really, this thing, start building it. And that's what some of these companies are done in the, some of the companies, for example, I can take the name of Move in the US, which is a financial thing. They firstly build a Slack community of the developers with just a static website, invite-only access. And once they have the enough set of community and most of them turned up as their customers, that's when they release their product. So I think building the brand is very important. Building the network with journalists or influencers or investors it all helps. Basically, the branding helps in multiple ways, so you should do that right from the beginning. Unless it is there are certain industries where you don't want it to brand it, but majorly 70% of the cases, you should actually brand yourself or the company.
Branding, awesome stuff. Yeah, you mentioned finding the right co-founder. You're married to the co-founder, right?
We are four founders right now in the company. So my second co-founder, Mabel, she currently leads our, she's a CEO, and she currently leads our marketing and the people functions in the country and in the company. And previously, she's been a co-founder with my previous startup. She used to also be part of the senior leadership of leading payment companies like PayU and Citrus. And she also, fortunately or unfortunately, happens to be my wife as well. we got married after doing two startups together. So then rest of the startups and the companies we happen to work together. The third co-founder, Dina Jacob, she's been last 15 years working in leading startups. She was a vice president of EY, and she was also the CFO of a company like Taxi for Sure, which got acquired by Ola, and one of the other companies, Tapso, got acquired by Amazon before she joined Open. And the fourth founder, Ajish, he's a tech co-founder. He used to run his own location-based ad network. Then he joined me as a CTO in my previous payment startup. And then he was heading SME engineering in PayU and Citrus, the companies where I worked. And then he joined as a CTO here. He also happens to be my brother. So there's two of us are the family out of the four.
Has anything surprised you during your entrepreneurial journey so far?
Surprises. I think the first 1 year, when I started in the early 2000s, my first internet startup. This is a time when, for 2 years I used to slept on railway stations. Because I didn't have money to stay, because I ran away from my home, because entrepreneurship was not a very cool thing at that point of time as well. I'd gone through all the phases. Basically, I was lucky to experience all the phases of entrepreneurship, starting from bootstrapping, even living your life on a bootstrap journey, towards building companies where sometimes you got stuck and got acquired by other place, even though you always wanted to build it out as well. Surprises, I don't think I have any particular surprises as such. Most of surprises are like, for example, in open, like, yeah, as I mentioned, like the kind of the when all of the investors rejected and this Japanese investor reaching out to us by reading a newspaper article and then putting a term sheet was a surprise for me. So in the early days.
So you've gone from sort of sleeping on train stations, running away from home to running sort of one of the biggest neobanks in the world. How do you sum up that up?
Yeah, I think it's been a good journey. That's what I keep telling everyone, that even if it takes time, if you are really, put your eyes on your dreams, it will happen. You can call it as a power of subconscious mind or whatever you want, but definitely it can happen. So don't give up, basically, once you have a dream. It will happen in some shape or some form. And then also leave the journey, whether it is a... Because if an entrepreneur, I believe that the biggest asset for an entrepreneur is failure, because when you fail, you also learn a lot of things and you have a safety net. Other companies may wanted to hire you as an entrepreneur, or this is actually like you're building the capital for this failure is actually the capital for your next venture when you are ready to start as well. So, you know, that's the way in which I look at this.
Yeah. Has anyone helped you? Any mentors or any people who've helped you on your journey?
I think there are a lot of people, right from, as I mentioned, the PayU founders, Amrish and Jiten, are CEOs who were mentoring me, who actually put the first investment. These are the mentors which personally touched me, but always, like, you know, when you worked in previous companies, the bosses, everything. I mean, there's a lot of money people basically who had actually helped you in multiple ways.
How big do you want to go with this then?
I think the market is really big, and especially in India itself, we have 51 million MSMEs, and we are just right now around 800,000 businesses. And, we believe that we can build a world-class fintech global firm out of India. So we are just starting on the beginning. So for the next 6-7 years, basically, we really wanted to stay and create like a, you know, world-class digital banking of fintech out of India.
Awesome. Sounds exciting. Last question then, for people who want more information on you and Open, what must they do?
Definitely they can write to me at anish@bankopen.co, and they can also look at our website at www.open.money.
Anish, thank you for coming on the show today.
Yeah, it's great to be on the show. Thanks a lot for, having me on the show, and thanks a lot, Neil.
Great stuff. I wish you all the best. Thanks for Anish for coming on the show today. And for more information, go to open.money. Thank you for listening and supporting the podcast, and if you're building something exciting, please send me an email, hello@neilpatel.co, or you can tweet @IndianStartupSH, or you can go to facebook.com/IndianStartupShow. Love to get thank you and goodbye.